This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
I am fired up. I push against Guru too. I am fired up.
I can tell.
About having you here. I'm in a really.
India's here.
Brittany's here. The whole crew's here.
Stephen's
but
here.
Who's really here is really one of the true pioneers of the modern marketing movement. Somebody that I've gotten to know over the last half decade, and it's been a real pleasure because you get to know, you know, I've enjoyed the relationships that I've gotten from the other side, people that are coming up the game, they've gotten to know me, we're friends. I feel very, very honored for you to be here on the show, Seth. Please, please tell the one person in the Vayner Nation who's watching this right now, who doesn't know who you are, a little 47-second bio or what, however you like to roll. How would you like to say hello?
I notice things for a living and try to point them out to people. I'm a teacher. I've started a couple companies, more than a couple. I do projects. And I try to make a ruckus. That's a good day.
That is a good day. And it's been a good life that way.
I'm not complaining. It's been a thrill and a privilege.
Seth, how many books have you written?
Well, there's 18 bestsellers when I was like an official author.
That is so ludicrous.
But before that.
I'm like pumped about my fourth.
Come on.
Four is very
good. You know
what? And three,
by the
way. 18.
It doesn't look good on you.
18.
It doesn't look good.
Do you know
on
I'm
going to
make, I'm going to go for 19. You know that, right? This is like a Tiger Woods, Jack Nicholson type thing. Is it 18?
It's 18.
I swear,
but before
I might
that, I was a book packager. And when I was a book
are.
Packager, I did a book a month for 10 years. So there are those other books, but then there's 18.
So a little bit, just because I think it's going to be quite enjoyable for the audience, I know that for a fact. A little bit deeper, like tell a little bit of you sold a company to Yahoo. Like, indulge me here for a little minute. Where did you start out? Because some of the stuff in your office.
I would say the big turning point was helping to invent commercial email as we know it, that's not spam. That when I started doing it in 1991, most people did not have an email address.
That's right.
And persuading backers that we were going to invent a way that email could be used. Think about any email you got today that you wanted to get that came from a company, not a person. That didn't exist before we did it. And so Yo-Yo Dime was a business that we built to do that. Before that, I was a book packager. Before that, I worked at a educational computer game company. We invented pretty much commercial educational computer games like Kids on Keys and Fraction Fever. And I had a line of science fiction games. It was great fun. I was 24. It was so lucky that I got that job. That was pretty cool.
Of the 14 bestsellers that you've written,
18.
See, I'm trying to.
You're
say,
subtracting
I'm
already.
Trying,
I'm
trying.
Four
is that was either. Subliminal. That means that I needed 14
more. Is there a new
more.
Gary Vee book coming
yes,
out?
Yes, but we don't need to talk about that.
I hear it's called Ask Gary Vee, and that you can pre-order it on Amazon.
And
I'm
gonna have to make volume 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
Anyone who wants to could buy 14 copies, and then we can just divide it up.
No, that's 8. That's tomorrow.
Hey, everyone. I'm Mike from Team Gary Vee. Thanks for checking out today's episode. On this podcast, Gary and Seth Godin discuss the world of change, impact, and the power of daily writing. I personally enjoyed the part where Seth emphasized the importance of daily writing and reflecting on the past predictions and observations he's made. Stay tuned for more of this conversation.
Of those books, you know, do you have a favorite? I know it's like children. Do you have one that stood out? I mean, I know that Purple Cow seems to be like every time I talk to people about you, like how, what I think of you, that seems to come out of people's mouths quite a bit. Tribes was somewhere I got mentioned in, which was very big for me, so thank you at the time I was starting the wine thing. Any of them stand out? Was there anything that really?
Well, most authors will tell you that their favorite book is the one that didn't sell.
That's what I say. Thank you, Academy. That's so weird you said that.
I wrote a book called Survival Is Not Enough. Charles Darwin wrote the foreword.
Wow.
And India's laughing. It's true. You
really?
Can look it up. Google it right now. It came out right after 9/11, which was not a good time to say the whole world is going to be different and we should like that.
Right.
It took me over a year. It had 45 pages of footnotes that didn't fit in that I published online. It's as close as I'm ever going to get to sort of a scholarly thing. And most people shouldn't read it because it's not what matches the gestalt of what we're trying to do today.
Yeah.
But I have a soft spot in my heart because no one bought it, right?
Yeah.
The new book, What to Do When It's Your Turn, I designed every page. I wrote every page. It made me happy to sort of play with the medium.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And but they're all my friends, my books. I keep them on the shelf so that I can look up and say, I remember when I was the person who could write that book.
Interesting.
I don't think I could write most of my books today.
And where do you sit today in book writing in your mind?
This was a year and a half ago. There hasn't been one word since then. It's just not on the agenda. It's not something that people are ready to buy another book, maybe from you, but not from me, where our attention span is different, our priorities are different, so I'm focusing on the school I run, the Alt-MBA, I'm focusing on how do I craft each blog post as if it was my last one, how do
I want to get
interact
into
with people.
India, I apologize, Seth. India, I know you have the questions. Is there one asking him about his social media versus, I saw that come through, did you pick that? I knew you would. She's really good like that. So I'll leave it for that. So we're going to answer some questions.
Okay.
Because that's what we do here.
Did we turn on the cameras yet, or are we just talking?
The cameras are on. The cameras are on. D-Rock is doing Facebook Live.
Hi, D-Rock. Hi,
D-Rock, what's going on with Facebook Live? How many peeps do we have? I'm sure.
12, 14.
No, there's... We're at 3.3.
3,300?
Viewers.
Very nice.
Adding the decibel to thousands makes it sound like a much bigger number.
It sounds much bigger. 3.3 people are watching. Big shout out to the third of the person. India, let's get into the first question.
From Dimitri.
Dimitri, good Russian name, good start.
Dimitri asks, what is the value of authority in a world where everybody is a possible thought leader?
Do I repeat the question?
No, you don't have to.
Because
I think everybody
got
heard
picked
it.
Up.
Nope, you can. That gets picked up. Somebody
semantics.
Else reads it.
Semantics matter a whole bunch here. What does authority even mean? And I think the currencies of anybody who wants to make change happen right now are attention and trust, and they're in a virtuous cycle. You don't get attention unless you're trusted. You don't get trusted unless you get attention. There are other kinds of attention. You can, you know, light yourself on fire in the street, but you don't earn trust doing that. So this attention-trust cycle goes around. The question then is, how do you get there? I don't think you get there by saying, how do I hustle a content media play to figure out how to get in front of people who never heard of me and somehow seduce them? I think you do it by being generous. I think that people tend to trust folks who step up before they have to. They trust people who keep their promises, especially when it's not convenient. They trust people who tell them the truth. And if you do those things, they're probably gonna tell someone else, and then you'll get more attention and more chances to be generous, and the cycle goes and goes and goes. And guess what? It probably never ends at a moment when you say, okay, now it's my turn to take, take, take. We left the take, take, take part out mostly. You don't feel like you owe Heinz anything. You don't feel like you owe TWA anything. You just are in this environment where you know your attention is precious, you know your trust has been abused. If someone shows up and treats your attention with kindness and earns your trust every day, well then one of the byproducts will be they'll want to hear what you have to say next.
Super easy to figure out why this guy and I get along if you've been watching this show, because that just wrapped up 184 episodes in one statement.
I think 183.
I know. I think I'm trying to play along here. I think what is super interesting about that answer and this question is that's right. And I think it's one of the reasons that I've had personal success is because I think about things in such a long period of time that that answer spoke to me because it's my natural state. When you think about things in a 10 or 20 or 40 year kind of cycle, well then your behavior matches that. And so you're not worried about the 1 week, 1 day, 1 month, even 1 year results. And then I also think the market gets to decide. There's one thing that I very much believe.
Can I just put a little asterisk?
Please.
Because you're about to sell yourself short here.
Please.
There's a glacial strategy which says, I'm a glacier, I'm gonna make it all the way down the Hudson to the ocean. And it's obvious where I'm going, I'm just gonna take a long time.
Yes.
I would say that the strategy you're talking about, which you have done consistently, is that at any given moment, the short-term thinker thinks you're an idiot because you are not trading. And that's the key, is that you are doing things that are so generous and so trust-earning that people look at you and say, why aren't you doing that other taking thing? And it's that feeling that the people around you think you've lost your mind. That's what makes it scarce.
I'm a little bit weird, and you know this because of because my personality actually on stage and style makes people think I am in short-term game. You know, I recognize that my vibe at times comes across as the worst version of the things that you're referring to. And so it takes people a little bit of time to completely figure me out. As a matter of fact, I would tell you, one of the interesting things about how I live my life is the reason I so deeply, you know, feel affection towards you is I was surprised myself how quickly you, like, I judge people based on how quickly they get me or not. and I always wonder if I'm never sure if I do it on purpose, if the shtick is almost weirdly on purpose, or was it always naturally, I think it's naturally there based on what happened in school long before I thought about these sure. things, but that's right. And so I think at the end of the day, the thing that really, really matters to me is whether Seth says it, whether I say it, whether the president says it, the bottom line is the market gets to decide. You know, when you make a book, when you write a blog post, when I feel like, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, the market is the judge. And so when you think about who's the tastemaker, who's the authority in today's world, we clearly have mediums today. I mean, look what's going on here right now. You know, you thought about this. That's fine, but we're basically, I mean, it's incredible. We're doing live and production TV here. Yeah. Think about this 20 years ago. You've been through the whole gamut.
Everyone owns their own media company.
It's crazy.
One thing we need to amplify here, though, there isn't one market. There are many markets.
Yes, agreed.
And so you can sell to a market that wants you to be a pickup artist, hustler, whatever, but just please understand, that's your market. Don't call me, because I'm not your market. And my argument is that most people, especially the people you want to be trusted by, don't like to be hustled.
100%.
And I wish that a whole bunch of people who call themselves growth hackers and quantum blah, blah, blah would write on the wall, most people I care about don't want to be hustled, because being hustled makes you feel bad.
Agreed.
What else you got, India?
From Bryce.
Bryce. That's a nice name.
He's got a canyon named after him.
He does.
Bryce asks, where do you see the internet going in the next 5 or 10 years, and why?
So, what's the next big thing? My argument is this is the next big thing. That if you are waiting for something beyond 1 billion people connected online, with mobile being the driving force, with a fight for attention, and with constant froth around the edges, if you're waiting for something else, you're going to miss out on a big chunk of opportunity. This is our revolution. There was the Industrial Revolution. There was the mass media revolution. There's this. And it will keep changing its flavor. The names of the public companies that run things are going to have to change.
Of course.
But
they all layer on top of the same.
Please don't wait for the next thing. This has been the next thing since 1991. And the people who asked me, at the newspaper conference in 93 when I told them what was coming, said, well, we'll just wait for that. This is it. This is what we got.
I totally agree with that, and I the one thing that's on the horizon that I think a lot of people are paying attention to is VR. And I say to a lot of people, I'm like, look, that's 10 years away. This in 1998, I thought by the year 2000, everybody would come into my wine shop and know the price of everything. And so I think the thing I've learned, my version of that, a same exact answer is, there's a long way away before, if VR is truly, contact lenses, sitting at our home, being in places, we're talking about 15 to 25 years away from the scale. We're just hitting the maturity. Let's not forget, 15 to 17% of all e-commerce done in America is done online. It's nothing. If you told me in 1998 that only 15% of all things bought would be online by the year 2016, I would have sat there and said, shit, do I even want to do this? That's forever from now. This stuff doesn't go as fast as we all think it's going to.
30 years ago today.
Yes.
1986.
Yes.
Sitting in my office in 215 First Street in
as
Cambridge,
Massachusetts.
As in like
literally today, or like kind of
30 years ago? I'm making that part up, but it's 30 years ago.
I got excited for a second.
Sitting in my office in Cambridge, Massachusetts. You know who walks in?
Who?
I'm 26 years old.
Who?
A guy named Guy Kawasaki.
Yes.
Now,
telling you Apple's the greatest?
Well, I was already a beta tester and we did a deal with him, right?
Yes.
The point is, if Guy had waited for the next big thing, he wouldn't have become Guy Kawasaki.
That's
if
right.
I had waited for the next big thing, I wouldn't have become me and you wouldn't have become you. This idea that there's always the froth around the edges. There are people who are working in VR today who are going to go off and do something interesting, but it's not going to be because they're right about VR. It's going to be because they're right about being a trusted person worthy of our attention. That's the arc of the people you trust and the brands you trust. Not that they got the product right the first day or the iteration right the first day, it's that they made a commitment to show up in a certain way, in a certain universe, in front of certain people.
What's crazy about that is when I think about the thought leaders in marketing and names that people throw out there and authors in this space, 30 years ago, he walks into your office. It's unbelievable that when you have the chops, A, how long you can keep the attention of the end consumer, B, how long this all plays out. Like, I just got fired up. The level of domination that I'm gonna have in 2037 just dawned on me, and I'm really excited about 2037.
You should be, except football will be against the law by then.
Don't even start.
Sorry.
Let's go.
Renee asks, what would cause you to hire the world's best psychic? Even the Caesars and Pharaohs consulted a seer, and so should you greats.
Well, she already knows the answer, right?
This feels great. Go ahead, you go.
No, that's the thing with psychics. They already know. Why are they asking? Next.
Yeah, I mean, look, you guys know where I sit on this one. I won't meditate. I don't need to see psychics.
Whoa. It's not okay to put those two things in the same sentence.
Yes, it is. I'll explain
no,
why.
No, it's not.
Well, you don't get to say.
I do, because one is science.
Yes.
And the other one is not.
Okay.
And we can't. Science is one of the coolest things that's ever happened to mankind.
It's not science, Seth.
It's not okay.
Seth, I'm telling you the truth about this. I mean, I hate disappointing you.
You don't have to like it, but you can't deny that it works.
No, I don't deny science.
Right? So it's not okay to start conflating things that are based on science.
Versus things that are not.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
So let me ask you a question. What do you think about emotional intelligence? Seriously, like, can I tell you something? Can I tell you something that weirds me out?
Go ahead.
Help me here, because I trust you. Why is it that often, not always, and I understand brain tricks and all that shit, but I get weirded out when I think of random shit, like somebody I haven't talked to in 7 years, and then the next day they call me. Or, like, a million other things. Like, tell me about intuition.
That has nothing to do with emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is Daniel Goleman's semantic take on what we need from people. The ability to look people in the eye, the ability to not eat the marshmallow, that's emotional intelligence is an important concept that people should understand.
I agree.
You're talking about instinct, intuition.
Yes.
Okay, let's have a conversation about that.
Can they not be in the same?
They're
cousins?
Not related things, no. They're just not.
I believe you, you're probably right.
Think about the people you know who you've hired here,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
The ones you like the best aren't the ones who are better at typing than someone else, or they're the ones who have the emotional intelligence to bring tension to bear to cause change to happen in a way that benefits others.
100%.
That has nothing to do with a friend calling you.
No question. I respect
so,
where you're
coincidence
going with that.
Is super easy to explain.
Please.
We, as humans, are storytelling machines.
Yes.
We notice things, but we have to make stories about them.
Yes.
You, yesterday, thought of more than 300 different people.
Probably more than that.
And one of them called you.
Right.
You paid attention to the coincidence.
Yes.
But you didn't say, holy smokes, 299 people didn't call me today.
That's right.
The reason the coincidence works is, as story manufacturing humans, we're always looking for that correlation, and that's why people buy lottery tickets. Because they think that there's some sort of weird cosmic numerology thing going on, because we're wired to look for weird coincidences, but there aren't actually weird coincidences in the world. We
it's
just
all
think
science.
There are. I didn't say that.
That's what you said.
No. There's plenty of things that aren't science because we make up stories that are irrational. What I'm saying is, there's a good reason we evolved to make up stories that are irrational.
Yes.
Because they kept us alive. Because sometimes there's a correlation between the stick breaking and the lion jumping out of the woods. And then when we listen for sticks breaking, it might keep us alive. And we'll have grandchildren and other people will listen for sticks breaking. Where it breaks down is now there are no lions, but we're still listening for sticks breaking. We're looking for broken windows. We're paranoid about certain things because...
It's hippos and sharks.
Hippos and sharks, sure.
I love that. Look it up if you didn't understand that. Go ahead, India.
Jonathan asks, Seth has a blog but no other social media engagement. Under which conditions is this advisable?
I think it's advisable under several conditions. Condition number one, where you want...
When did you start your blog?
Really?
Yeah.
It was 89 as an email newsletter.
Yep.
So, do the math.
Yeah, no, it's a long time ago.
Then I met Joey Ito. And switched it to Typepad.
Yes.
There was some blogging before that, but I can't find it. I don't know where it is.
Yep.
And then after I met Joey Ito, I've been doing it as relentlessly as I could. There was a period it was 5 blog posts a day, and then I realized it wasn't helping me or the reader, so now it's been 1 a day.
For a really long time. Do you know how long?
Years and years. If you want to develop to get through the dip, to be the best at something, you're going to have to say no to a lot of things.
You love no.
No is super important.
Super important.
And so when Twitter came along, I said, I could be pretty good at this because I'm early, but I would have to use my blogging time to be pretty good at this. So better.
How much time do you spend on a blog post, you think, on average? I mean, I'm sure they all vary.
Well, I spend 10 hours a day thinking about the next blog post. Right. I write a bunch, but you don't see most of them.
What, do you just like kill them?
Yeah. No.
Well, they stick around, right? You might bring them back. You might, like, I assume when you're spending 10 hours a day, in 4 weeks, you may spend 10 hours, and you're like, oh shit, and recall
sure,
it back
it all
and
connects,
have that
but that's
right?
What, that's why I think every human should have a blog, even if you don't put your name on it. Every day, write something that you're willing to put in the world so that a week from now and a month from now and a year from now, you can look back at it and say, I said this, I predicted this.
Did you keep a journal as a youngster?
No, not at all.
Do you like writing? I know it's a funny question.
I like talking about ideas. I like helping change happen. There was a time in the middle of the 18 books when the thought of sitting down and going to this practice of writing a book really engaged me. Mm-hmm. But I'd rather look someone in the eye and talk to them than...
What about public speaking? We've gotten to do a couple events.
I love giving talks. Yeah, I hate flying there. I love being on stage. You're on and then you're off. There are rules. You can't bring on, a chimpanzee and a marching band.
Well, you can.
You're allowed to use slides. I have rules, right? You can use your slides, but you can't go beyond that. You can't throw things into the audience and stuff.
I like that.
But that's too many variables. So back to India's question.
Yes. What was that question?
So Steve Pressfield in his book, The War of Art, talks about the resistance. In Lynchpin, I talk about the lizard brain.
Do you read a lot?
Yeah, I do.
You read books?
Yeah.
Like how many books in a year will you read?
Well, I get 2 or 3 a day in the mail, and I read them until I get the joke, and then I stop. So that's 1,000.
Jesus.
But sometimes you don't need to read that many pages. Ask Gary Vee, did I mention that's on sale in 2 weeks? You can pre-order it now on Amazon. That book will probably take me more than 15 minutes to get the joke, because it's just rich and layered and a lifetime of insight.
Keep going.
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
But there are other books, like if the author did a good job in 5 pages, you get the point. You trust that the rest of it is proven, and now you can go on to the next thing.
It's cool.
I'm not good
at fiction. What's the last great book you read for you? What did you enjoy recently?
Well, fiction-wise, there's a book called Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Okay. Hysterical, brilliant, funny, science fiction, and it's about you. You're in it.
Yes.
Well, you're not going to like the Devereaux character.
Is that who I am?
Yeah.
Is he handsome?
Yes.
Yeah.
But
I love him.
That's not the best thing to say about him.
That's all I care.
There are parts of
who
him
cares?
That I'm in there. It's like you don't want to go there. Anyway, and then there's a really great book about a novel about Marcel Duchamp's work called The Bride Who Was Stripped Bare by Her Bachelors Even.
That's the whole title?
Yeah. That's a really juicy book.
India's fired up.
There you go. And then, but nonfiction wise, I'm just constantly amazed at how generous authors are, because authors know you can't make a living writing books, but they do it anyway. Anyway, we're still answering India's question. Are we running out of time?
Well, it's not India's, it's Jonathan's.
Jonathan. So the punchline is this.
The punchline is when you're fucking Seth Godin, you don't have to do it because you're a beast in 20 years.
Wrong. Okay. Completely the opposite.
Of course.
Zig used to say you can be a meaningful specific or a wanderer.
And Zag said when you're fucking Seth Godin, you can get away with it.
Has anyone ever walked out on the show?
Yes.
Because I could go second. I have something important to add here.
Go ahead,
you're heckling
sir.
Me.
I'm sorry. I am. I just, you know what? I'm just happy you're here.
He was my friend.
I'm sure. I apologize. Okay. Go ahead.
So Zig used to say you can be a meaningful specific or a wandering generality.
Interesting.
And the problem with most social media is you are not the customer, you are the product. It was optimized to make you anxious until you use it again. It was optimized to extract from you nervous energy, not productive output. So most people who fall into it are checking one last time, checking this, posting that, liking this. Why? To keep them from doing important work.
Because which was watching television for a lot of people.
But great, let's TV.
Yeah, but hold
on. So now you have a chance.
Hold on, here's where we're gonna disagree a little bit. I mean, stick here for a second, India. Hold on. This thought that all of a sudden MySpace and Friendster and Facebook and Twitter came along and took us away from all this mass important work.
Who said that?
You did.
No. So let's start with Clay Shirky. Clay Shirky pointed out that Wikipedia got built on a decrease in television viewing. That billion hours that were invested in building Wikipedia came from TV.
It could have come from reading.
No, he shows it. It's his great book. It came from TV.
He put a chip in everybody's head who
Look.
Listen, we can't talk about this? What do you want me to just be like,
no,
okay, great.
No, you don't have to agree with me.
Well, I'm not agreeing.
But you can't deny this scholar's work without examining it and saying, wait,
yes.
I challenge his methodology.
No, I think that's fair. And I think you're right about that. I do. No question do I believe an enormous amount of internet behavior has come at the behest of television.
So what my point is, television's dying because we're giving people more choices because the channels are breaking down, et cetera. Mass is going away. What do we want people to do with the time they're not spending watching Happy Days?
They're still watching a lot of TV, which is stunning to me.
I agree with you.
I know you know that.
But my argument is the people who are watching you and I talk, right, Bryce and Jonathan and the psychic, who already knows what I'm about to say.
Yeah, they set that up.
Have the ability to make a dent in the universe.
100%.
We gave them a platform they can use to do
100%.
It. 100%. And they think that they're advancing their cause by using various social media networks the way that they are optimized to be used. And my argument is they're not.
I understand.
That I am super glad that the musicians of the 60s that went way out on an edge weren't seduced by just sitting there listening to Beach Boys records all day. They decided to make Bitches Brew, or they decided to make Slow Train Coming, or whatever it is. They went outside the thing to say, this is my work. And the problem I have with the people who are just saying, me too, plus, plus, they think they're doing their job. They're not doing their job. They're hiding from their job. Their job is to create a body of work that earns them trust and attention.
Seth, real quick, you know, that's interesting, but let's go a little bit deeper here, because I like this. Don't you believe, when you're saying plus plus and this, that, and the other thing, don't you believe that that is exactly mapping the people that did just, like, not everybody is going to make great bodies of work?
Not true.
Okay, go ahead.
You think they're born that way?
No.
The people, everyone who makes great work was born naked,
yes,
unable to read,
yes,
and pooping in their diapers.
Okay.
Right? Somewhere along the way, you make a decision. You make an investment. You go forward.
Okay.
And if we look, we see that it used to be that John Hammond would pick you and you would become a famous recording artist.
Yes, I believe
so
that.
So the pickers are gone.
Yes.
And
that,
so now
the
number of people who are picking themselves keeps going up. All I'm saying, my only point in this case is this. If you find that at the end of the day, you could say, I did a really good job and my social media universe is clean and taken care of, and that's all you have to point to today, I don't think that's a good day.
And what I'm saying is Sally Pants McGee, who has that to point to in 1974, has that same thing to point to.
She can do better.
She has a chance to do better. So what you're saying is that everybody can go to Yankee Stadium today, hit the bat on table, and take a swing, which is different. No, hear me out.
No.
Yes.
Athletic endeavors are different.
Athletic endeavors are different than intellectual endeavors.
For sure.
Hold on. So what you're saying is everybody has the same capacity to learn.
No, what I'm saying is what we define as athletic endeavors is one axis, but I could say, for example, if you're a caregiver for a senior citizen who's struggling with Alzheimer's,
yes,
you are capable of looking that person in the eye,
yes,
with empathy and affection in a way that changes them forever.
Tell me how you develop empathy. Tell me.
Well, now you're changing the topic. We can have that conversation.
Because you just said, I can teach Andy how to be a caregiver. That's going to... Andy can definitely be taught... Hold on, let me finish. Andy?
We're not talking about Andy right now.
You can teach to look in the eye. Check.
I can teach Andy.
Yes.
To do. I can't ever teach him to hit a home run in Yankee Stadium.
Okay.
I can teach him to do something with his voice, his heart, his
see
soul.
See what you did with Yankee Stadium. But hold on. You can't teach him to hit a home run in Yankee Stadium, but you can teach him to be the best version of a baseball player that he can be. In the same way that you can.
But it has no economic utility.
Well, that's a whole different conversation.
Well, but that's the conversation I'm trying to have, but you keep interrupting.
No, not true. Not true. Because what's most interesting to me is there's no economic situation that Sally Pants McGee could be focusing her time on something else besides liking buttons on Facebook.
Of course there is. That's
where
we disagree.
Okay, well, hold on.
Sure.
Do you agree with me that Sally Pants McGee would probably likely in 1984 to be sitting and watching? Well, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
Well, I'm saying nothing's changed. The places that people are deploying their energy have changed.
My point is that liking something in Instagram or Facebook is a way to hide from the productive thing she could be exposing herself, because the productive thing is scary.
You think she's gotten into a place where that makes her feel better, and that we've tricked people, and people have tricked themselves to be a part of something versus when they sat on the couch?
No, when they sat on the couch, the entire culture was in on it, and it's similar. What I'm saying is, we didn't build the internet so that YouTube could show cat videos. We built the internet.
But aren't cat videos escapism for somebody, just like reading a good book is escapism for you? Seriously, I'm asking.
I know people around the world who have something they really need to escape from.
Okay.
The people who are watching this, much less.
Fine, I would argue and agree with you that people have much bigger headaches than, but the reality is that somebody who's watching this has their micro version of what they think they're escaping from. I sit here every day and go yell and say, look, if you're a white male in America, Jesus Christ, you want to talk about winning the lottery?
Right.
You won. So I'm with you on that.
Okay.
What I'm fascinated
if
by-
If it's entertaining, there's nothing wrong with it.
People think cats falling
just
out of
acknowledge,
a tree are funny.
Just acknowledge. You're entertaining yourself, you're not doing your job.
That's fine.
That's the only thing I'm trying
to
say.
But who gets to define what their job is?
But the question to India was,
yes.
When I'm doing my job,
yes.
Why aren't I using the other forms of social media? The answer,
is
to
that
quote
you
Neil,
defined what your job was
well,
for yourself.
What Neil Gaiman has said is, the way he deals with writer's block, if he hasn't written a book and needs to, is he makes himself super bored. He eliminates all inputs and so until he's so bored that the only way to entertain himself is to write.
So are you saying that one of the big KPIs for you of just staying to the blog was not getting all that stimulus and allowing you to create more?
Forcing me to say either I did nothing today or I made something worthwhile. That there are days when I will answer nothing but email.
Yeah.
And I feel horrible at the end of the day because I don't believe that's a productive use of my
time. Let me tell you what the most interesting part of this last 4 or 5 minutes was for me. Seth's self-awareness for himself. And I think that to me is the most interesting part of what just happened. Like, to me, that speaks to really understanding yourself and positioning yourself in the best position to succeed based on what you think is
important. And all the successful contributors / artists I know are similar.
So for me, I need chaos. Like, apparently, I just walked here, apparently. I just walked into my office, they'll all laugh. It was so quiet, I started yelling at everybody that I can't get into my place without all the inputs
right.
and
so
the chaos.
Right, so that awareness is key.
It is.
But if we look at most of the people who are showing up in my box and your box,
yes.
you're saying, what do I do, know what I do?
Yes.
They're copying patterns
yes.
in social media without being aware of
not
the fact.
Not just social media, though.
Well, that's the question. Without being aware that those patterns yeah. are sabotaging their
no,
business.
No, the question was for you, when is it right?
When is it right for
and,
them?
And, I think, that's
and
right.
the answer
and
is, what I'm saying is, first try nothing. See what happens if you are forced to level up, not by fitting in, but to level up by standing out, by saying something important,
you know,
generous,
funny.
Unique.
You know what's funny? I'm just sitting here and I'm thinking, it's one of the funniest things about how I go about things is I don't want to read anybody else's things. I don't consume anything else because it puts
Except
me in that.
Book.
But really not even, like I'm crazy that way. Like I don't want to consume anything because I just like observing people in whatever format, the real world or the digital world, to be able to just do my thing because that's what makes me comfortable in analyzing.
Right.
It's a little bit of like a, it's interesting.
So the way we built the Alt MBA, which is a school I run,
yes.
is it's 28 days and there's an enormous amount to do
yes.
with your name on it in public
yes.
and commenting substantially with your name on it on other people's work. Cycle, repeat, 13, 14 assignments in 4 weeks.
Do some people struggle with that system?
I mean, everyone does, that's what it's for.
Yep.
Right, if I send you to Ranger School,
yep.
you're gonna struggle.
Yep.
If I send you to Tightrope Circus School, you're gonna struggle. That the learning is hard, that's why the dropout rate on online courses is 98%.
Is that true?
Yes, and the reason is because as soon as it gets hard, and it has to if you're gonna learn something, you quit.
Well, that's why people are mad at watching my content, because I talk about hard work, and they don't wanna hear that. They wanna
right.
see what the secret is.
Exactly.
And it's just like doing Mike, Muscle Mike. You like needed someone to be like, you have to do this.
I needed, you know what's funny about that, India?
You're looking very fit.
Thank you, brother. Because that's what India is referring to.
Yeah.
I needed to be accountable to somebody. I figured out my trigger in that game. I needed to be accountable
right.
to somebody else besides myself.
Exactly.
India, last one.
John asks, what is something you both disagree on?
Most things. I mean, I think
that's
everything.
Now self-evident, but mostly it's He is a superstitious troglodyte who wants to deny that science exists.
Not true at all.
And
not
I had Charles
not
Darwin true. Write the foreword to one of my books.
Not true at all. I believe in science tremendously. I believe
it believes in you too.
More than I believe in it.
The thing is, gravity doesn't care whether you agree in it. It's not just a good idea. It's
just
the
like
law.
Science is just like the market. It is what it is. I mean, I'm super fine with science. I don't understand it. I don't know what it is, but I'm super cool with it. Listen, Seth. I'm super pumped you're on the show, man.
It's a pleasure. How can people find you online?
They know how to find me. Okay. How can they? What I want to do is let's link up, make sure everybody starts reading Seth's blog on a daily basis. It is massively, very much knowing my audience. This, you know, for the few of you that don't do it, it will be a tremendous addition
but
to your world.
But please don't send me email. Send him email, do not send me email.
Right, because I just like people a lot more than Seth does.
It's true.
It's just true.
It is.
That's what we disagree on. I like human beings, Seth doesn't. Seth, you get to ask the question of the day. Any question, there'll be a lot of answers. We'll get some consumer insights from it, which I love.
Who would miss you if you were gone?
He's a deep soul, Seth. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you,
love
team.
You, pal.
You guys are awesome, all of you.
You keep asking questions, we'll keep debating them.